You're listening to the Superpower Up Podcast with your superpower experts. This is the place where we explore real-life superpowers and give you the tools to unlock your own.
Hello, everyone. This is Tonya Don Rekla, your superpower expert, and this is going to be fun, folks. Hold on to your seats. We're going to have a blast on today's show because today's guest is just fun. You're just going to really adore him. I adore him. You'll adore him, and it's going to be yummy, juicy goodness. And so Damian Lupo is the money mentor. Dun, dun, dun. But this guy, he cracks me up. He developed his own martial art, people. It's called Yokido. Like, it's just the funniest thing in the world to me. Like, of course, why not? Why not develop your own martial art? Because you simply can. And so we'll talk to him about that. But he also wrote a book called The Reinvented Life, right? And so, of course, that's really in alignment with everything that we talk about here on the show about taking ownership, you know, self-dominion and full autonomy and living without the restrictions of anybody else's programs and stories that most of the time we're not even aware that we have. So I'm excited to talk to him about that, especially as it connects to the money piece. And as we know, a lot of folks who are change agents and the woo-woo types and light workers and whatnot, you know, money, you know, some of us have kind of a shady history with money in this lifetime. And so it acts as a catalyst. Well, I get this sinking suspicion that he's going to help you see how to switch that around for yourself. So without further ado, let's bring Damian Lupo onto the show with a big warm welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Tonya, it's really good to be here. I'm still processing the whole yummy. I feel like a gummy bear all of a sudden, like the yummy interview with this guy.
Yes, I have done my job today. Well, we are talking about money mutant abilities, so we might as well throw in gummy bears and, you know, anything else we can throw at the mix. I get the feeling that there's not really going to be anything off limits in this conversation. So.
That's the fun part when you can really be real with people and you can connect, whether it's with an interview or just one-on-one. I think that's the whole point of us being people, is that we can go deeper into truth and really connect. And if we don't go there, what do we really have? It's just, we kind of just collide with each other.
Well, and I find that really, doing this show has been such a remarkable journey and instantaneously, usually when looking over any peripherals that somebody sends over. Within the first 2 seconds, I can get a sense of whether or not they're playing in what I call the abstract frequency or not. And in that space, you know, you can only really stay in that space when you get that there's truly no separation between us. And so you are me, I am you. And the connection is where the richness lies, in that synergy between us. Like it's just pure magic. And in that space, there's no privacy, there's no walls, there's no pretending to be something else, you can't hide anyway anymore. Too many of us are intuitive and can pick up on energy, so it's like, who are you fooling, you know? So you might as well just be open, and what most people perceive to be vulnerable is really our most powerful place to connect in, and so much goodness comes out of that space. Like, it's like, why would you not want to do this? And so it's funny that you would pick up on that. And I really do feel like that is an indicator of success, especially as we move forward with things only getting faster and only getting more complex and the world kind of shifting and changing. You know, those are the way showers, is saying, look, it's okay. You know, drop it all. Like, you be transparent, be open and authentic. Trust us. It's going to be okay. And you will survive it. And so I appreciate you being willing to play in that space.
It's the only thing I know how to do anymore. I mean, once you've shifted over into that space, it's the red pill. I mean, really, from the Matrix, yep, once you take that pill and you're in the truth, there is no going back. Once you pop into a different energy level of authenticity and self-responsibility, when you go there, going backwards is like putting ice picks in your eyes. Like, there's just no way it's going to happen because it's too damn painful.
Well, I did it. So I have a great story, and then we will get into, you know, asking about your superpowers. But my husband and I teach all the time at conferences and stuff, usually about transparency and due diligence and corporate counterintelligence and all that fun stuff. And we talked to a group of teens one time, teens and young adults, and I was sitting with one of them as a one-on-one. I think he was in his early 20s, and I was talking about getting out of your head. You're like, get your energy out, get it expanded out. And he goes, well, how do you know if you're in your head? I was like, huh, okay, well, that's a good question. I said, all right, well, I said, you feel me now, right? As I'm talking with you, right? There's nothing that's triggering you to say that I'm being disingenuous or I don't believe what I'm saying or anything like that. He goes, no. He goes, it feels really good just to sit here with you. I said, awesome. Okay, so you feel that. And I said, now I'm going to pull my energy in back into my head. And I said, I don't know if I can do this. You know, I haven't done it forever, but let's just try it. Let's just play. And so I pulled the energy back into my head and he's like, his eyes get all big. He goes, holy cow, I can feel it. I was like, you can feel it? He goes, yeah. I'm like, holy crap, good. Again, I was like, psh! And I let it, I was like, that was so painful. I was like, I can't believe I used to live there. And it's like, it's like you said, it's like you let this, like you open up Pandora's box and it's like, it's out there. And it's like, you can't call it back. And going through that experiment was like the best thing I could have done because it was such a great reminder of just how constricted so many people are. And it attuned me to be able to walk clients through that and be like, okay, you're in your head. Now let's start to open that up. And I can sense the resistance, you know? And it's like, oh my God, you just want to take like a chisel and like break open their skull and be like, just open up, like let yourself out. So it's funny that you would say that, like you can't get back in there. Like you really don't fit anymore.
No, and there's something that we can relate this to in nature. It's Prigogine's theory of dissipative structure and the process of perturbation. And basically what happens when you take something and you put pressure on it, it will eventually in nature reform. It breaks down and then reforms in a different way, like a caterpillar into a butterfly. And when that happens with us, when we put pressure, we can't go backwards. And so this isn't just a theory or a nice woo-woo idea. This is real. This is what happens in nature. And so when you start putting pressure on yourself, it is interesting how we can pop out. And there's no physical, like you're defying gravity if you think you're going to go backwards. You just can't. But that's kind of the embracing of it and allowing yourself to morph into what you're supposed to be versus what you were.
Okay, tell me that theory again because I didn't catch it.
It's called Prigogine's theory of dissipative structure, and it's about perturbation. It's the process of breaking down into your core elements and then reforming at a higher energy level. So that's what happens when you put pressure on something. You break it down, and then it pops into a different energy level, much like the caterpillar goes into a butterfly state. It can't go backwards.
I love it. I appreciate that. That was a little gift you just gave me. And so what's so funny is I tell people I'm like the worst like personal development person ever. Like I just get these silly ideas or I get guidance. Like I'm writing about it in my newest book. And it's like, you know, I remember when I was on this expedited piece of the journey and they're like, the noises, my voice, whatever it is, God talking to me was like, you know, just put your hand through the wall. So I'm like, okay, you know, and I kind of put my arm through the wall and I could see where nothing was solid, you know? And then at one point it was like, you know, energetically go into your husband's body. I'm like, sure, you know, and I'm like playing around. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, was this a good idea? Like, should I have asked some questions? Like, who am I listening to? You know, and it's just all these silly ideas that come to me and I'm just naive enough to kind of jump in and do them. And then, so I get to experience it. But I didn't study any of it. You know, it's like all the information just kind of comes to me. And so I love when things appear like this and it's like, oh, look at that. There's something to back this up, you know, and or people are like, people have been doing that forever. I'm like, oh, well, it was new to me. Like, I didn't know, you know, like, who knows?
Breaking news.
That's right. It's fresh off the presses. So, very cool. Okay. So as promised, I'm going to ask you the question, what are your superpowers?
I think that the superpower I have is this X-ray ability to see the truth through numbers. And I can see things in a heartbeat that tell a story that, you know, when most people think about their numbers or their life, there's a truth there. And it's the same, there's a weird synergy between the financial world of numbers and the truth about what happens on in a dojo when we're doing martial arts training. I can tell if somebody's present. I can tell if they're powerful. I can see the truth there because you can feel it, and you can feel it in the numbers once you have this like superhero ability. And that comes through my experience of being in the middle of a lot of messes and then owning the truth about what those messes were in terms of how I created it. And so now I can see the story, whether it's in the dojo or on a financial statement or somebody's credit cards or whatever we're talking about. There's this instant ability to see the truth. And most people don't realize when they're staring at the truth, what it actually means. And so to be able to see that quickly is, it's almost like magic, but it's probably a process of going through a lot of mess and just studying the mess and then being really vulnerable about what part we caused of the mess. And then you can take that and apply it to other things. That's probably what it is, if anything.
Dude, you are a mutant for sure. Well, and it's, I love that you said that, that you, so you had this like cool thing and then you're like, yeah, at the end of the day, really though, it's your own like stuff. And one of, you know, people ask me all the time, like, how did you get here? Like, how did you move so fast? How did you get to all this knowingness? And I'm like, honestly, I think it's self-doubt. Like, I really think that that was my secret. And I've learned to appreciate it as just checking in and like gauging it and being really honest and real with myself. But if I'm truthful, it was doubt in the beginning, like, can this happen? And what did I do here? Can I do it better? Like, da 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 da. You know, it's that, that's that running script of mine that always brought it in, as opposed to wanting to blame or point fingers at anything else. My first go-to is always, what happened here? And that was way before I kind of adopted the idea of, you know, oneness and really there is only one of us here. So it's like, who else am I going to look to? Or being able to see like everybody's a projection of myself. Those came after the, you know, the shadow side, if you will, or the challenge side of really doubting myself. And one, you know, in kind of, yeah, you know, I remember even as a counterintelligence agent, it seems like such a fanciful time of my life, because I remember thinking, oh, like here I was in one of the like coolest, like sexiest jobs around, but it's like, what am I doing here? Like, am I really running around chasing spies? Like, is this a thing? Like, I remember just sitting there going, how did I get here? Like feeling kind of like a fish out of water. Like, you know, I think I was doing all the right things. And obviously like I ended up testifying in federal court and like there's indicators of success, but I didn't feel that way because it was this constant, like it was such a rapid growth phase that I really kind of just kept checking in. And so I like the idea of what you're talking about, like looking at the numbers, like looking at the energy, like reading all of it, you know, kind of seeing the binary code and piecing it together, the matrix, if you will. And then, but ultimately recognizing that it's you, like there's nothing out there, you know?
Yeah, it does. It's fascinating how quickly numbers will tell a story, and they don't just tell a story of what somebody's doing. They tell a story of what matters to somebody and the values that are driving someone. And it's embarrassing, but really helpful to understand this from my own experience of building a giant company, a $20 million company in my 20s, and then losing it all, and then going back to the numbers and realizing if you looked at the financials, which I wasn't doing at the time, I was just out mm-hmm. there making a lot of money. And if I had looked at the numbers and seen where the money was actually going, it was what I valued. It's who I was, because those were my habits and patterns. And I was exchanging the energy of money for things and whatever experiences. That told a story that I wasn't present to. I was present. I learned it later. And if I had looked at it in the middle, it would have changed everything or nothing, depending on whether or not I was honest about owning it or whether I blamed somebody else for it. If I had owned it, it could have changed everything in a heartbeat. And that's the shift when we own the story that tells us who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My husband and I talk about that a lot with our businesses, and it's this idea of like anywhere that you're ignoring or you're seeking power, when we moved out of startup, you know, I realized quickly, like we were trying to apply startup practices to emerging businesses. And it was like, ooh, this isn't working. Like, wait a second, what's happened here? And it was like, okay, we better shift quickly, you know, and I have a pretty rapid ability to analyze. And it was like, okay, what do we need to do? And I'm like, strategy. Like, we have to know exactly what we're doing. Whereas with startup, it's like, just keep throwing shit at the wall. Something's going to stick, you know? And it's like, okay, wait, it's stuck. Now what? Now what do we do? Like, oh, like how do we keep it from falling off? And so it was like, oh goodness. And it changed everything when we moved into, you know, hiring, when we moved into expanding the team, when we moved into, you know, and it's like keeping all of those strategies going. And I realized really quickly exactly what you're talking about. Financial strategy was one of the areas that we seriously neglected early on. And it was just kind of like you're talking about, like in startup, it's like, I don't know. It's like, if money comes in, where can it go out? You know, but it's now being able to plan and strategize and all these other things. And I don't know if that's similar to your experience, but the nugget I'm taking away from what you're saying is the willingness to, as you're growing things, whether it's a relationship, you know, we do this in our marriage all the time too. We do it with our parenting. We do it with our businesses, you know, constantly being willing to kind of check in and do an audit of what's happening. Because if you don't, you're going to find very quickly you may have outgrown a process, and you may just be kind of spinning your wheels. And oftentimes it's seeping power somewhere, you know, and if you don't kind of plug that hole, you're going to blink and it's gone.
Yeah, this is really pushing on something that people get really messed up with, and this is the shift from being an entrepreneur to an investor. And the reason I'm bringing this up, you talked about throwing shit against the wall, and sometimes it sticks, and then you go, now what? And it's kind of the same thing when you're an entrepreneur, you have a business, you make some money. And I was just working with a client recently that had this happen, did a business, was successful, had a bunch of crap on the wall, and it sold for a couple million bucks. And so he's like, this is cool. Now what do I do? What he did was apply his same philosophies and his same activities around his business skills and his businesses towards investing. And all of a sudden, his $2 million was down to like $700,000. And that's when I got in the conversation. And I looked at everything and asked him about the different investments he was doing. And I said, hey, you know what you're doing? You realize that you're getting the same excitement, the same adrenaline from your investments that you were from your business. And you're all over the place. You're using things that are really important in startups that are a disaster in investing. You're running from the same mind. You almost have to exchange your mind to a different place. It's why business owners tend to be disasters after they sell their companies. It's totally consistent. It's because the skill set's different. And they either are diversifying when they shouldn't diversify, they're focusing when they shouldn't, and they're doing the wrong thing in the wrong place. It works really well in one place, but it doesn't work the same in another place, and it's different skills. And unfortunately, the smartest people end up being the ones that get in the most trouble because they think, oh, I'm so smart. I don't need any help. And probably they need a completely different language, and they do need help because it's not necessarily intuitive to shift from one space to the other. You do need retooling and retraining a lot of times.
Well, and I think that's true everywhere. I've seen it in our marriage. You know, we very consciously and in complete awareness built our partnership on top of the idea of exactly what you're talking about. Like, it's going to shift, it's going to change. And in fact, that's what we are designed to do. We're mirroring for each other so that we can continue to guide each other closer to and support each other into our own self-actualization process. We raise our daughter the exact same way, not in a traditional kind of parenting way, but in the way of like, she's a full autonomous being. You know, how do three full autonomous beings now interact, and how do they support each other, and how do they mirror for each other, and all of that? And I don't see any difference with business. Like, business is an entity and it grows. And it's like, once it gets past that startup phase, like, it alters. And I love the fact that you're bringing investing into it, because, you know, when we came out of government, we started a corporate counterintelligence firm, and that moved into vetting and due diligence solutions for startups and investing and that kind of thing. And we see that so much, is it's like there are different conversations, and you need different tools for different conversations. And most people who are drawn to entrepreneurship have their hands in a lot of different things all at the same time. But it's like, you can't treat all of them the same. And to be able to shift and add tools in the superpower arena and the personal development arena, I tell people, like, once you're done with a process, like, be willing to let it go. The second you perfected it, it no longer serves you. Like, it may be a tool in your toolkit that you draw on later, but it's not really driving your growth anymore. You've got to keep asking, what's next? Like, what's the next process? What's the next space I'm moving into? Because if you don't, you're going to find that an aspect of you goes ahead and you're trying to apply old concepts to it, and it's not going to work.
This is really relevant today, because things are changing so quickly that if we aren't willing to let go of things faster and faster, we get stuck with the past that we're dragging into the future. And even if we're willing to adapt or learn new things, we've got all this stuff. And the technique that, and the way that I look at this is really blank slating our lives all the time. And this is something that came up when I was moving. As I moved a lot, I would look at my stuff that I was dragging into my new house. And one day I looked at all the stuff that was coming in, and I thought, why do I have these 50 boxes of books? I've moved these things 20 times. I've probably spent the equivalent of buying a house in moving costs on these books. And then I asked the question, if I just left all this stuff outside, what would I go get? Like, if this was not with me right now, would I go buy any of this stuff? And it made me think that a lot of the stuff that I had in my life was there because of it was just there. There was no particular reason why it was coming into my future. And I said, well, okay, so I want to start over. I'm going to have a blank slate in my life, and I can do this to other things. So let me think about the people in my life. Are they supporting my future, or are they part of the past? And I became known for, in a kind of a dangerous way, almost a scary way, being a master of evisceration, where I would eviscerate people. And it was oftentimes friends. It was people that I became very close with. And if I didn't talk to somebody, if something was off energetically, somebody might come to me after 2 or 3 or 4 weeks and say, "Hey, are you eviscerating me? Like, are you getting rid of me? Because you're really good at that and I haven't heard from you." And what was powerful about this was that I was able to be honest about the people that were great parts of my mm-hmm. past that were not supposed to be part of my future. And the coolest thing and the most important reason that we have to really do this is so that we open space for the people that are part of our future and we're not cluttered with the past. And this is, I mean, it's the same thing with anything. Using blank slate really opens the space for whatever you're going into. If you keep holding on to people and stuff and activities and your strategies, you're going to be stuck in the 20th century and you're dead.
I love it. I'm laughing because I will never forget. I have one girlfriend who's, you know, we've been friends since the fifth grade. And at one point she looked at me and she goes, we were probably in college, and she's like, "Tonya, you recognize faster than anybody I've ever known when something's over. And then you walk away from it faster than anybody I've ever known." She goes, "I sit around and I have to think about it and I contemplate it and all this." She goes, "You just walk away." And so I'm laughing, like, in total, like, synergy with you on that. But we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk with Damien about the concept of reinvented life. And I'm going to pick his brain about the relationship between money and movement and fluidity, because I guarantee it's there, folks. So stick with this, our yummy, juicy conversation. And we'll be right back after the, No, I have to ask you, where can people go to find out more about you?
Best place to find me is DamienLupo.com, I-O-N, DamienLupo.com, and all my stuff there.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, glad I got that in there. All right. So we've been talking with Damien Lupo about money mutant abilities, and we will be right back, folks. Stick with us.
Are you here to change the world? Do you talk about things like vibration, frequency, awakening, and consciousness? Are you pretty sure you have superpowers? The Superpower Net is unlike normal coaching programs and conscious communities. We provide training, intuitive guidance, peer-to-peer learning, intensive one-on-one coaching, and a high vibrational network of people just like you. When you join the net, you get 24/7 access to a collaborative group of people who support you as you master your personal power and unlock your superpowers. If you're ready to use your superpowers to change the world, then join the Superpower Net today. Visit superpowerexperts.com/the net to learn more.
All right, we're back. You're listening to the Superpower Podcast, and we have our very special guest, Damien Lupo, with us today talking about money mutant abilities. And as promised, Damien, I want to pick your brain a little bit, one about your book, Reinvented Life, which I'm suspecting that we started to dip into a little bit with the concept of blank slating and your gift of eviscerating. But also you mentioned about the fluidity component. And one of the things that I play with a lot is the idea of money as energy and as this fluid concept. And here recently, my husband dragged me kicking and screaming into the cryptocurrency world, particularly because we had just so many clients asking our firm to do due diligence on different opportunities, and very, very resistant to it. But one of the concepts that jumped out at me about it was this idea of the full-on autonomy of it, and the idea that as an independent, decentralized commodity, it has the ability to remove the need for an oversight, a kind of big brother mediator component in the transaction. And it almost like slapped me across the face when I was reading like the original Bitcoin paper or whatever about, wow, we don't even realize how much we've abdicated of our own power to the idea that if things go really badly, somebody's going to step in and save us. And the idea of the finances and then the fluidity of it. And you mentioned, you know, the world's changing so rapidly. Do you see any connection in all of that?
Yeah, I think people think Jamie Dimon is Batman or something, because they look at the bankers and they say, oh, it'll all work, or the Federal Reserve chairperson is going to save them if something goes bad. And that I'm on the same page. I love the crypto because it decentralizes the power and it empowers the individuals and it empowers the entire system. So it's based on trust, and there's something incredibly powerful about trust. It's the opposite of what cash or a currency, fiat money, that that's been created is all about. To me, that's all about force. It's about forced. It's about a force that happens with these people that are making this thing up, and they're breaking our ability to create wealth by just printing things, and you're shifting this power. So David Hawkins has a book called Power Versus Force. That's one of my core books and teaching materials because it's so important. It's what I use for martial arts and money mentoring and everything. There is a shift from the force of our current money system to the power of people to engage based on trust and relationship. So whether we like it or not, whether Jamie Dimon likes it or not, and he is fighting like crazy. And I pick on him because he was out in the news saying crypto is a mess and crypto is a fraud. And I was like, dude, if you're out there pushing like that, it means you're scared to death because you're losing control.
Yep.
And I love that. I'm like, I like the banks losing control.
Too.
Makes me happy. So that is the shift into it's about relationships and trust and empowering people. So, I mean, how can it be better than that? That's like the coolest thing that's ever been invented with money.
Well, and not only that, but you throw in on top of it, like it is about trust, which is funny because, you know, our whole due diligence process and everything is based on trust and transparency. In fact, that business developed a Clear Directory, which is the first fully vetted business directory. Like you can go and read the transparency reports. Like, is this company legit? Do they, you know, they get screened for frauds and scams, and it's like they're out there. It's like airing all their dirty laundry that's pertinent in the decision-making process for business, because it's like, let's just start calling a spade, you know, and kind of rip these veils off. But with the crypto stuff, what I find fascinating is not just the trust piece, but it's also the idea is like, you better know what you're doing, because there's no calling that money back. You make a transaction, like it's gone. Like you screw up and fat finger something, like, but that's on you. Like you're an adult, make a decision for yourself, you know, and that, and it's funny because that's where our due diligence process really went to. And then of course it would lead into the superpower conversation of like, look, you don't get to blame anybody else. Like there, you know, one of my best favorite phrases is there are no victims in the spiritual realm. And so it's like, take some ownership, recognize that you screwed up, you know, or that you perhaps rushed into a decision that wasn't the best. But this kind of prolonged adolescence of our entire population is kind of gross, you know? And it's like, we've got a lot of people running around just pointing fingers and thinking that, like you said, somebody's going to come along and save us from ourselves. And it's like, why would we need that?
Well, I think we're used to it. I think we're used to, if you think most of us have credit cards, and if we make a mistake or somebody tries to mess with us, we get to undo it. And there's all these protections and the laws are there to protect the consumer. And so we can do things pretty flippantly and we can try things and not really worry about it. If you have ever done a wire transfer, once the wire happens, it's gone. It's the same thing with crypto. And you have to be totally certain and totally responsible about the decision you're making. With credit cards, we've become so used to doing most of our money transactions, most of our activities based on a system that doesn't make us responsible for anything. We can say, oh, you know, I didn't mean to do that. And basically we get a mulligan on the transaction.
Yep.
And so we're shifting into an age of real responsibility and ownership of our own activities and actions. I think it's going to scare a lot of people, and it's really enlightening and exciting for a lot of us.
I love it. I love everything about it. And well, and it's funny, I interviewed someone the other day and they wanted to bring up Trump. And I was like, well, I said, here's the deal. Like, this is what I know to be true, is that we had a whole lot of people wanting to see change. But then when it came in a package that they didn't like, it was like all of a sudden they wanted to control for it. And I think the same thing happened there. Like, we got to see a lot of people's raw fears come forward in a very quick fashion when all of a sudden they didn't like something that occurred, or they thought that things should have gone another way, or they wanted to control for it. And I think the same thing's true of crypto. Like, I'm like you. Like, I love to see flaws in a system. Like, I love to see, like if there's a flaw in the system, then we can just make a better system. You know, we can do something differently. It's an opportunity for growth and expansion and innovation. But if you're so busy clinging to what was, and if you've built your entire existence on top of preserving something, then you're a fool, because nothing ever lasts. Like, everything always shifts. And we see a lot of people sitting in some really scared places now because they didn't anticipate, or they thought maybe it wasn't going to change. I don't know. All I know is about when Justin and I came out of government, I looked at him and I said, here's the deal. I'm not a soothsayer, but, you know, I have some superpowers myself. And I know that I want to be sitting in the stands eating popcorn when all the shit hits the fan. Because I don't want to be worrying about losing something or being so attached to something and watching it mold and ship and shape. You know, I just want to ride those waves. And that's essentially what we've done. But it took courage, you know, it took a willingness to do what you talked about at the beginning of the show, which is kind of look at where you fit into the puzzle. Like, what is yours in this?
Yeah, you really do have to ask that question, and you have to be willing to be wrong. There's so much defending all this stuff that we do. We don't want to be looked at like we're idiots. We don't want to be humiliated. We have all this concern about what other people think about us, and it's really kind of freeing totally when you say, "Wow, that was a really dumb decision," and I am not going to defend that decision anymore. I'm going to say, "Yeah, it was stupid." I'm doing that right now with one of my companies, realizing it has gone through its cycle, and there were some things that happened throughout the process that are not, they're not things that we can overcome, and to fight, to push, to make those things fixed, or, you know, to fix those things, it really means that we're going to give up the future life that we have to actually go do something else. And so we're defending mistakes from the past instead of saying, okay, here's what we learned from them. Let's do better next time. And that's where most people get stuck. They're defending the stuff because they don't want to just own it and say, yeah, I bloopered that one bad.
Yeah, that was silly.
Oops. I mean, oops is okay. There's so much attacking for people that make mistakes, and some mistakes are pretty bad. I get that, but we're so afraid because somebody in public does something, and then the media goes after them, and it's like you can't say you're sorry without somebody saying, "Okay, great, I'm going to sue you now because you made a mistake." So then we pretend that we're perfect. Like, give me a break. You get stuck.
Well, yeah. And that's social media all over the place. Like, and that was a big, you know, that really feeds, you know, that due diligence business in the sense that it's just too easy to be a self-proclaimed expert. And so it's like, as long as you've got a fancy, shiny profile and all this other stuff, like, it's, you know, it's easy to look impressive on the surface. And when you dig under a little bit, you kind of start seeing, like you said, you see the patterns and the numbers and you can get the information. It's the same thing with us. It's like, I love social media because to me, it's like everybody's airing all their deep insecurities and they don't even know it. I love just getting on there and being like, oh, there we go. You know, just being able to kind of sense it and feel the energy and everything else. And everybody's just kind of doing what they're seeing being done and without stopping to go, wait, do I want to do that? Like, is that how I want to appear? Does it feel good to kind of put that out there? And if it doesn't, then do it differently. Like, who cares? You know, I did that. It's so funny we're bringing this up because I did that last night. I'd had like this weird day and it was like blah, 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 blah. Like I would say it was anxiety, but it didn't feel that way at all. And all of a sudden it was just gone. And I'm like, huh. And Justin goes, well, what was that about? I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, well, is there something that we should talk about at work? I was like, yeah, no, it's just gone. Like, it's like, and I refuse to make it a thing. Like, it was there. I can kind of see the silliness of it, but then it was just gone. And it was such a cool experience just to be like, oh, no, it's gone. Like, it eviscerated, you know, it was just like gone. And it was like, cool, I'm okay with it just being gone. Like, I could have easily gone into all kinds of spaces and wanted to analyze it, look at it, and make myself wrong and feel gross about it. But it was like, I don't know, it's gone now, so let's just move on. You know, like, that's cool. And allowing that in relationships, I think, we call it the 10-second rule. Like, you reinvent yourself every 10 seconds. And when you allow that to happen with each other and not holding stories about, well, this person's this way or this person's that way, it's so liberating.
Yeah, there's a simple saying around just allow things to be what they are. And it is, I mean, we've heard this, it is what it is. Okay, that's really simple, but it's really powerful instead of trying to make something it's not and forcing it. See, we're back to force and how we're going to make this thing this certain thing versus saying, okay, I can acknowledge it for what it is and I can just hold space for that to be true instead of trying to manipulate things. We're so used to seeing these highlight reels where people are manipulating their life look, feel, and image on Facebook or whatever it is, you know, typically Facebook. So we go, oh, that's amazing because they're forcing a certain perception onto us. And then we start comparing our real life to their highlight reel.
Yeah.
And then we get all frustrated. And we try to do something different to make our life match their highlight reel because it looks very exciting. Why do we do that? It's not even based on reality. It's based on lies and illusions.
Well, and it's marketing. Like, come on, folks. Like, let's get real about this. Like it's no different than watching reality shows and having the same kind of concept. You know, but there are both components there. Like we teach people, like, there's some of these things are necessary evils of business. Like, there's a consistency, there's a profile, there's ways people can reach you and connect with you. And you know, I say a similar thing. You know, I say that it's, we have our own blooper reels, you know, but we're watching other people's highlight reels, and those two things don't match up. So I love everything that you're saying. Let's talk really quickly about Reinvented Life. So talk to me about that. Where'd the inspiration come from, and what's changed in that unfoldment?
I think if we sum up the book, it was the original 15 year ago, Damien, that heard the
10 year ago, Damien.
It was like a different person. I don't recognize that person. In fact, if I were to meet that person, I'd probably run in the other direction now. I mean, that's how different it is when you just are really honest about things. You're like, ooh, mm-hmm. I don't like that person. Okay. Oh. I need to change something. So When I look back, the question I used to ask myself when I was back there was, if I saw something that I wanted, the question I asked was, how can I create this? And it was a really powerful question, because as an entrepreneur or as someone that's driven, you are pretty creative, and you go out there and you it's the ends justify the means. I want that Ferrari. I will figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. And what shifted over the last 10 years when I went through a Reinvented Life, when I lost $20 million and lost my house, my cars, my girlfriend, my dog, like everything went away.
That's like a bad country song, dude.
I've heard that before, and I feel like I should write that. That may be the next version, like Damien version 3.0 or something. It's the country singer. He's talking about his life. Like, really?
Yes, I love it. Do it.
But you know, the shift was just a different question. It was actually adding questions, and instead of just saying, how can I afford this, or how can I have this, I started asking, do I want this, and mm-hmm. should I have this, or should I go for it? And that was a really big shift. And when I started asking questions about things like, ooh, that's a really cool car, or that's a really cool house, or an experience, or whatever, the question, do I want this? Not just, can I do it? Because if I can do it, it's like, yes, challenge accepted. I'm going to go get that thing. And then there's carnage everywhere in your wake. Versus, do I want this, and should I have this? Is this resonating with who I am and the best that I can be for other people, the contributions and the impact, versus just more stuff? And that was really my plan. More stuff was me being successful. And what I missed was the entire point of life, which is the fulfillment part and the love, the connection, the impact, the contribution. I missed all those. It was about the security. So those are like the five out of the six human needs that we have to really satisfy. I was really good at security, but it was a false security, which is what a whole bunch of money in the bank is. It's false security because it's never going to be enough. You're always going to be afraid it's going to go away. I guarantee you that that's the truth. You have to shift into a place of confidence, and that's where you're really doing something that's more meaningful than just bits of paper with dead presidents on them.
Oh, I love everything that you're talking about. It's so synergistic. And it is the idea that, you know, a lot of people chase financial freedom by thinking that once they have enough money, they'll be financially free. And again, embodying that abstract frequency, it's like, it's all opposites. You know, the cause and effect are totally backwards. It's like, you have to be totally free of all those limitations and those fears before the money comes. Because then when the money comes and you really can build wealth solidly, you don't need it. Like, it only comes when you don't need it and you've committed. You know, in our language, you've committed to using your superpowers for good and you're doing all this other stuff, then it's like, it's almost like a ho-hum. Like, of course it's there. Like, it's more of an indicator of your ability to detach from control versus, you know, what we think of and we strive and we strive and we strive to create that. So I love the fact that you're on the other side of that saying, look, I've been there. Trust me when I say it's not what you think it is. And you can do it differently. And at some point you'll be forced to do it differently. You know, I've been playing with really similar concepts over the last few years of the wanting energy and needing energy and truly kind of tearing that apart inside myself. And it's like, wait, is that true? Like, is it really true? And with techniques like, you know, are you okay right now in this second? Are you okay? Like, because otherwise we're projecting out so far. It's like, well, what if, what if, what if? And it's like, okay, but right now in this moment, you're always okay. Always. Even if you're dying, like, you're okay. Like, death isn't that big of a deal. So, you know, really removing all of those fears allow us, I think, to see clearly. So I love the fact that you had that experience and that you shared it with the world through Reinvented Life. Really solidly founded stuff, folks. I'm hoping you can feel this, those of you listening, the difference between the experiential process Damien's talking about and having gone through it and really not just gone through it and here, let me tell you about it, but gone through it with a really a keen observation of self and a willingness to own his stuff through it and then share that. That's That's powerful stuff. That's important information to put out in the world. And so I thank you for doing that.
Well, I appreciate that. And there's something that's really the biggest difference, I think, between the work here and what this book was. It was the complete ownership of the stuff. And it wasn't just a nuclear event that I'm sharing. It was, okay, here's the nuclear event. Here's everything in my life that where I said, okay, it's all my fault. It's everything is my fault. And I started there. And if I were to look at something after I dug into it and said, okay, that really had nothing to do with me, that's fine. But I started with complete ownership. And it was I remember in 2010, I was working as a volunteer in a political campaign, and I got fired as a volunteer, which is epic to get fired as a volunteer.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty impressive too. After I denied it happened for about 6 months, I was like, nope, I didn't get fired. I resigned because I had other things to do. And then I realized, wait a second, how can I actually change anything? How can I be powerful? How can I learn anything unless I say, yeah, I got fired. I was a terrible volunteer. Like I was trying to disrupt the system that I was on the campaign to disrupt. And that was the big shift to say, okay, I'm responsible for everything. Here's what I learned. Here's the gut-wrenching experience of going through this process and losing everything and starting over, recreating, and then tearing myself apart. And then here are the tools. Here's a process that you can go through that's not going to tear you apart, but it's going to give you a sense of real presence on what's real. And it was embedded into the book. So it's not woo and it's not just technical. It's a blend of reality and a process that you can use. And that's why it's so important. That's why people can use it. And it's not just something they're going to read and then let go of to go to the next thing.
Oh, I love it. My husband says it's, you know, that he calls us where the woo meets the do. And it's like, you got to have that practical component. You got to be willing to kind of go out there a little bit and be courageous and say, well, what if, and maybe things aren't quite what we think they are. And it still has to be applicable here, or what the heck is the point? Like, what are we doing here? I love it. I love it. Well, we could absolutely talk to you for hours, and you know, I for one would welcome that. But alas, let's go ahead and remind people where they can find out more about you.
Best place to visit me and reach out is DamianLupo.com. It's where I do my work. You can interact with me. You can learn more about the martial arts that I developed, and you can go if it resonates with you. It's where I live. It's the digital me, and it's a raw version. So I think that's one of the differences. There's no sizzle there. It's just it's real, uncut, raw, more Damien. So if it resonates and you want more, there you go.
I think that should be the title of your next book, More Damien. You asked for it, and here it is.
Here it
More
is.
Damien. Oh, goodness. And then the subtitle needs to have like juicy and yummy in it. So if you could, and then I want a credit somewhere in the book.
I like it. This is totally, I feel like we're in a yoga session. It's going to be a juicy, yummy process
yummy,
of squishing
juicy.
All this stuff. I'm like, wow, okay. Either that or there's Care Bears involved.
I like the gummy bears. I'm going to go with that one. Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And again, thank you for all the work that you're doing in the world. I honor it and I appreciate it. And I, for one, am just really happy to know that you're out there doing it. So thank you.
Tony, it's been really, really fun to be here. And I appreciate the time and I appreciate the work you're doing as well to create this space and invite people like me to come in and share and everything you're doing to impact other people and lift them up. So thank you very much.
Oh, awesome. Well, you are quite welcome to all of you out there. I know you're doing great things as well. And until next time, we appreciate your loyalty. Go out, uncover your superpowers, and change the world. Take care, everyone.
Are you ready to discover your superpowers? Go now to superpowerexperts.com and discover your superpowers today. We'll be right back.